to expose their children or their families to lead paint poisoning. And the best thing we found is that, on the next slide, is that we needed to build collaborative partnerships with the key stakeholders in the neighborhoods. And that was established that Joseph M. Smith is one of our community health, neighborhood health centers in the Austin-Brighton area. And they do treat a lot of the Latino families as well as the Portuguese families and Brazilians. We also met with them to talk about doing the kind of outreach to the Brazilian population. And in 2005, we met with their community health worker who was there doing outreach to the Brazilian immigrant population. We met with her and we discussed, you know, what we'd like to accomplish there. And what we wanted to accomplish is to get this lead awareness out among the Brazilian population to increase screening of their children. And one thing that we hadn't been doing as a childhood lead poisoning prevention program is to look at the adult screening, because there's not a lot of information on what the lead levels are in adults, and particularly those who are in high-risk occupations, to see if their levels are affecting their health. One of the things that we did is to decide to try and use a mobile health van throughout the community to try and bring a one-stop shop, a one-stop screening and diagnostic center on site where day laborers work. Usually the Brazilians assemble around 6:30 to 7 o'clock in the morning in a parking lot, and they are chosen to go to different venues to do work. The employers offer no kinds of safety precautions, no kind of protection equipment or dermal protection for their workers. They simply are chosen for a job, and they go to the site, and they do the work, and a lot of the work they do is in the painting industry, in the demolition and construction industries, and they are being exposed to high levels of lead dust when they're doing this work on these very old buildings. One of the things that we wanted to do was to make sure that we get each of those adults who were willing to come forward to get screened, to have their blood tested, to give them lead awareness education about the dangers of lead poisoning. We decided to do this by working with another key stakeholder in the Brazilian community, and that was the Brazilian Immigrant Center, which is an advocacy group for workers' rights and workers' health and workers' occupational health and safety. And we decided to use mini grants to help support not only their outreach workers at Joseph Smith's Community Health Center, but also to support the outreach efforts of the Brazilian Immigrant Center to go out, to educate, to provide on-site training for the day workers so that they can be able to understand the dangers of lead paint poisoning and how to protect themselves. And once we found that we started to provide the training on-site for the Brazilian Immigrant Center, workers started to be more vocal about their rights and what they were being exposed to. Particularly, we had people who were working on-site, women who were pregnant, not knowing that they were exposing themselves to high levels of lead dust that would be, in turn, passed on to their developing fetus, and of course, they would be highly poisoned. And of course, in Massachusetts, pregnant women aren't really protected under the lead law. You'd have to be born first and under 6 years old before you could actually be protected under the lead law. Yes? Yeah. Oh, okay. Oh. Well, let me just say this, that the Division of Occupational Health and Safety was part of our collaborative partnership that we developed with the Brazilian Immigrant Center, the Joseph Smith Community Health Center, and that is still continuing on. Although the study is very small right now, we're still trying to get those people to come forward in terms of the Brazilians to come forward and be screened. We're doing this work continuously in the neighborhood, and at different festivals, church events, and so forth. The mean age is about 36.5 years for the adults. 94% of them are male, 5% female. And of course, the mean platelet levels are 14.7 micrograms per deciliter. And for the children, there are 2 micrograms per deciliter. About 11% of them had levels greater than 40, which CDC says they have to be removed from the work site until their levels drop below 25. ZPPs way over 100, some were up over 800. And so these are serious, highly poisoned immigrant families, and they have to deal with that. And of course, one of the things we've learned is to ensure that contractors are held responsible for protecting their workers under OSHA, 29 CFR 1910, that painting contractors are regulated in the future. We're looking towards to regulate all paint contractors in the city of Boston so they're trained in safety awareness, dust mitigation, and containment practices. And additionally, we are looking to target outreach to other Latino groups, other Dominican groups, and other Haitian immigrant groups that in different parts of the city. And we feel this will be an effective model that we can use in each key neighborhood for those who are working in the demolition and painting construction industries. And so we're continuously doing this work. It's not finished, and we're still collecting data. Thank you.
I want to acknowledge the partners that are listed up here. I will be acknowledging them a little bit more. But this was an exciting intervention that happened in New England, where we wanted to bring together an urban and a rural setting in New England to compare asthma outcomes by doing environmental interventions for families with asthmatic children. Essentially, this was a 3-year grant. It ended in December from HUD Healthy Homes Demonstration Grant. It was administered by the Asthma Regional Council, but it was coordinated by ERT associates. The study in Boston happened with the Boston Public Health Commission, which is their local health department, as well as Boston Medical Center. And in Vermont, it was a collaboration between the Vermont Housing and Conservation Board, their LEAD program, as well as the University of Vermont's nursing program. And data analysis was provided by the National Center for Healthy Homes. Peter described ARC, which is a coalition of federal and state partners working together to address the environmental contributors to asthma across the 6 New England states. And as probably most of you know by now, what the major triggers in homes are, dust mites and pet dander, cockroaches, mice, fungi and molds, environmental tobacco smoke, and I didn't list my own personal asthma trigger, which are fragrances and sprays. And interestingly enough, HUD had put out a paper last year on, it was called Asthma in the Home Environment, and looked at some of the literature that's been put out on this, and they found that people with asthma living in low-income urban housing have been found to have patterns of sensitivity that are higher with cockroaches, mice, and molds. And also the inner-city asthma study also found that cockroaches are more prevalent in the Northeast, where we are. I will say that we did a very exciting integrated pest management study as well, but we won't have time to go into that. But I will say that we have, out of this grant, developed a DVD, and we have about 100 of them over there, giving them out for free. And it's geared at for housing facility managers as well as for tenants on how to do integrated pest management. The similarities of the studies, which happened in Vermont and in Boston, were that we did environmental interventions for children, for those who were diagnosed with asthma by a physician or healthcare provider. We provided education, supplies, and structural housing interventions. Both programs realized health improvements for their asthmatic children. Boston looked at 4 months post-intervention, and Vermont looked up to 12 months post-intervention. And they used the same health assessments tool, so we were able to make some comparisons. One of the problems in both studies is that we had smaller sample sizes, so we might have had a little more difficulty reaching a statistical significance because of the smaller sample sizes. Some of the differences, though, between the two projects were in Boston, they were mostly renters. About 90% were renters, whereas Vermont, they were mostly single-family homeowners. About two-thirds of them were. In Boston, there was a focus on pest control, whereas in Vermont, pests ended up not being really much of a problem at all. Boston's demographics were lower generally SES, although in Vermont we had a lower SES as well, but in Boston we had much more racial diversity and a larger immigrant population. So now I'm going to take you a little deeper into each of the two studies so you can see the contrasts. In Boston, the purpose was a little different than in Vermont. And this was, the study was designed by Dr. Megan Sandell. She is here to answer some questions as well. And by the way, I adapted some of her slides, so I do want to give her credit for that. In this particular study, we wanted to not only to see whether the home interventions improved asthma outcomes, but also whether there was a difference between just doing an educational intervention versus doing both an education and a home intervention. The children were all under 18 diagnosed with asthma. We recruited 75 families, but ultimately 56 went through the entire program, representing 81 children. 78% of them were African American or Latino, with a large immigrant population. And as I mentioned, 90% of them were renters. And the basic way that we received referrals and did the interventions is that we partnered with two nonprofit affordable housing developments, and we also got referrals from the Boston Public Health Commission. The site interventions were randomized control assessments. We had one group that just received the education-only intervention, and then the other group received both education and a structural home intervention as needed. In the education piece, they not only received education about